falling sky started everything on fire. Great clouds of smoke rose into the upper atmosphere and blocked the sun so that no sunlight reached the ground. It became cold and dark. Photosynthesis stopped, and plants and animals in the ocean or on the land either starved or froze to death. The dinosaurs didn't do anything wrong that caused their death. It was just fate that an asteroid hit the Earth and killed 70% of the species that we know of on the planet. Unfortunately, in our lifetimes, we may experience the same fate as the dinosaurs. But I'm not talking about another asteroid collision. I'm talking about a nuclear war. If you live in a city that has a military base, there's a missile that's aimed at you right now. If you live in a city that has an important industry, a major university, a large airport, an oil refinery, or oil storage facilities, there is a hydrogen bomb that's aimed at you right now. We live in a perilous era. There are 15,000 nuclear weapons on the planet, and the 9 nuclear weapon states are in conflict with each other. The United States and North Korea, NATO and Russia, India and Pakistan. We're just one misunderstanding, one mistake, or one fanatic politician away from a nuclear conflict. In the Second World War, fleets of hundreds or even 1,000 airplanes were used to bomb a single city. But with the invention of the atomic bomb, only one airplane and one bomb was needed. The Enola Gay carried one atomic bomb with the power of 15,000 tons of TNT. And when it dropped that bomb on Hiroshima, Japan, 100,000 people died. Over time, even more powerful bombs were built, hydrogen bombs, and had the power of 500 Hiroshima bombs. And of course, the United States and Russia don't just use airplanes. They have intercontinental ballistic missiles with hydrogen bombs on them. And they have nuclear submarines with missiles. A single Trident missile submarine can carry 100 hydrogen bombs with the explosive power of 1,000 Hiroshima bombs. Knowing the power of the bombs and their targets, we can understand the destructiveness and loss of life that might occur if these were ever used. Let us imagine, for example, that the United States attacks Pyongyang, North Korea, the capital, with the smallest bomb carried on a Trident missile submarine. 500,000 people, about the population of Sacramento or Baltimore, would die. Nuclear weapons kill people in 4 different ways. There's a shock wave so powerful that it knocks down concrete buildings and kills everyone within that zone. There's radiation that's released from the atomic bomb as it fissions. The radiation would kill 50 to 90% of the North Koreans over the next few weeks. The shock wave continues out with enough power to knock down residential buildings. 6 miles in diameter, there's a blast of light so bright that if your skin was exposed, you'd get third-degree burns, which can be fatal. And flammable things like leaves, newspapers, and your clothes would burst into flames. And of course, if we attack North Korea, they're likely to attack us back. And these terrifying scenarios I'm talking about are just if each side uses one nuclear weapon. But Russia and the United States each have 4,000 strategic nuclear weapons. That's enough to attack each city with more than 100,000 people in each country with 10 atomic bombs. Even a war between India and Pakistan, two of the smallest nuclear powers, with only a few hundred weapons of about the size of the Hiroshima bomb, we might die as unintended consequences. My colleagues, Luke Oman and Alan Roebuck, calculated the spread of smoke after a war between India and Pakistan. It only takes about 2 weeks for the smoke to cover the entire Earth, and it would rise to altitudes between 20 and 50 miles above the surface. At those altitudes, it never rains. The smoke would stay there for years. It's estimated that in a war between India and Pakistan, that we would lose 10 to 40% of the yields of corn, wheat, and rice for years afterward. The entire world only has enough food to feed the population for 60 days unless agriculture produces more food. Ira Helfand, a member of the Nobel Peace Prize-winning International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War, has estimated that 1 to 2 billion people would die after a war between India and Pakistan of starvation. And after a full-scale nuclear war, temperatures would plunge below ice age conditions. We would be in a nuclear winter. No crops would grow. It's estimated that 90% of the population of the planet would starve to death, and civilization would be destroyed.
The Penthouse Studios, high above the majestic mountains of New England. Full Power Radio presents 4 hours of nonstop radio entertainment. It's time for the Lee Elsie Show. And now, here he is, Lee Elsie.
All right, here we go. A sombering start to your Friday, fourth day of March 2022. This is 94.9 News Now and Stimulating Talk. We are broadcasting out over Connecticut, Rhode Island, and Long Island. Actually, global. That's right. All over the world. All you have to have is internet access. If you got the internet, you're in business. You can listen to us anywhere and everywhere. Carry your smartphone around. Download the app. Crystal clear audio with Alexa. Even on our website, 949newsnow.com. Lots of places to find out information. You can go to the website. You can go to my website, which is still under construction, if you will. I know we haven't updated that in a while, but we will do that hopefully in the next week or two or 3 weeks or something like that. As soon as we get it up and operational, it'll be something that we'll have forever, and we'll be able to move and shake with it every single day. Please like the Voice of Freedom Facebook page. The more new folks we have on that, the better. I've always said if you can share it, that'd be great. Share the page with your friends. I don't know how these damn Facebook algorithms work. I have no idea. You know, we have tens of thousands of listeners more than that every day. And, you know, it seems for some reason we don't have or haven't built a lot of the Facebook following, but we could do that. That'd be great. Like I said, I don't understand how that works, but I would assume that if you share it more, that would be better. So if you are so inclined to hit that share button, that would be great as far as the Voice of Freedom page. That way more people can talk back and forth, and you know, a lot more folks can interact with each other, which I think would be a good thing. So, yeah, a beginning that is certainly not one with a rosy disposition. Yesterday, more death and destruction, more bombings, more chaos, more cruelty. It's war. This is war. We watch movies, we romanticize about war to a certain respect. Only the people that have actually been in a war can tell you that what you see on TV doesn't come close to giving you the real feeling of either being shot at or being in a building that's being bombed or having somebody literally try to kill you. And only our Vietnam veterans and a very few, and a Korean veterans and a very few members of World War II. Of course, we've got Desert Storm folks can say the same thing. But what I'm saying, my point is that we tend to think of war, I think, from 30,000 feet away and don't really think about it up close and personal and what it actually is doing and how it actually is affecting folks on the ground. And, you know, I can only imagine how bad it must be for families and women and children who are hiding in bunkers trying to avoid being the next victim, the next casualty of one of Putin's bombs, or in this case, this power plant that's been attacked. Now, I don't know what's going to happen with this. I mean, maybe it's a journalistic sensationalism. You see a power plant being attacked and everybody loses their mind. But so far, everything that has happened has almost been, I feel as though it's almost been minimized, right? What we're seeing on TV. I know we're getting more of the pictures now. Yesterday was, you know, pictures of literally burnt out apartment buildings. You know, apartment buildings with giant holes in them. I mean, this is where people lived. Civilians lived. And now they're turned to rubble. And that all happened in the last 24 hours. So this is a march across Ukraine. This is Vladimir Putin, who is trying to reestablish the old Soviet Union. That is, if you can't see that now, then I'm not really sure what you're looking at. So the question then begs itself is, what do we do? And how does this end? How much devastation are we going to allow to happen? Are we just going to sit back and sacrifice? Now, I don't have an answer, but I'm not a paid member of our federal political contingent. Right? I know right and wrong. I feel like I can tell you what's right in this situation and what's wrong. But I guess the choice as of right now has been made by everybody. Think about this. The choice has been made by everybody. We're just going to sacrifice Ukraine. Because here's, you know, here's the easiest option for the world is to sacrifice the people of Ukraine and hope that Putin stops at their border. I mean, that's the easy solution. I mean, not the solution, but that's the easy equation. I mean, that's the way it's got to be being figured right now. Right? We'll hammer him with sanctions for a while. The surprise is that the Ukrainians are fighting back as ferociously as they are. I don't think people probably saw that. I think maybe the rest of the world in maybe their war games or their scenarios thought, well, the Ukrainians will push back a little bit. They've got a rather large army, but not that big. And eventually they'll be overrun and lay down their arms, surrender. Vladimir will engulf Ukraine, and that'll be it. They'll get their resources. They'll be back to where they were. He'll be happy. They're not NATO anyway. We'll figure something out. I feel like that's probably what everybody is hoping, even now. Right? Even now. Because nobody wants to engage because he's threatened the nuclear option. And nobody knows how stable he is. And as I played for you in that opening, a nuclear war is catastrophe. And it's over. If, in fact, we begin to lob, you know, real nuclear weapons at each other. I mean, one or two would be, again, absolutely devastating. If we start lobbing 1,000 at each other, it's over. It'll never be the same. I mean, two may make it never the same, considering how big these bombs are now compared to what we dropped on Nagasaki and Hiroshima. So, what do we do? How does this end? And is the world just willing to sacrifice Ukraine? Would that be a good deal for everybody right now? Right? Would it be a good deal to go back to business as usual? You know, Russia oil, we get that again. Let's say we fast forward this to March of 2023. He's completely across the entire country. Flags are flown. Russian flags are flown over Ukraine. The rest of the world is mad, holding their breath, stamping their feet. But within a couple of years, they'll open up dialogue, discussions, blah, blah, blah. I mean, is that an acceptable resolution and a solution to this? I don't know. Apparently, leadership across the world seems to think, though. Now, they're obviously, I think what's happened is they've seen that, as we have predicted on this show and others, you're going to see the devastation. You're going to see women and children dead. or running for their lives or hiding in bunkers. Videos of children in hospitals yesterday. You're going to see those, and so you're going to want to act as a nation or a people and give them arms, do this, do that, stand behind them. But in the end, is it worth the risk? Is the planet worth the risk of Ukraine? That maybe is the, you know, the equation that's being figured out, I guess, or calculated, maybe is a better word, by all the great leaders. Are we willing to just to sacrifice Ukraine to the madman and hope he stops? Now, if he doesn't stop at the border of Ukraine and he moves on other countries, well, now it will probably be over. Unless, of course, at that point in time, they're like, oh, well, it's just one more. Or it's just one more. Or it's just a few more.